Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. This episode is a review of the Permaculture Handbook, Garden Farming for Town and Country by Peter Bate. Before heading into the review, I would like to thank Matthew Cohn and Almira Nell for their support of the show. This program is 100% listener supported, and everyone's contribution makes a difference. Go to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support to find out ways that you can help me change the world with permaculture. One place you can start with that is to share the show with others. You can like it on Facebook, where you'll also find pictures about my various travels, observations, and projects, as well as news articles related to permaculture. Or you can find me and follow me on Twitter, @permaculturecst. When new episodes go out, so does a tweet to let you know that new material is available. I also send out questions and interact with listeners there. The last one of these for today is that you can also listen to the Permaculture Podcast on the go via the Stitcher app, available for iOS and Android. Go to your marketplace, whether that's iTunes or Google's Play Store, search for Stitcher, give it a download, and once it's installed, you can search for Permaculture, and I should be the first show on that list. Now then, The Permaculture Handbook by Peter Bate. This is the long-anticipated and much-desired book by one of the stalwart elders in the American permaculture movement, Peter Bate. His involvement in the community started in the 1980s as part of the first wave of permaculture practitioners and teachers in the post-Australia spread to Britain, the Americas, and onward. He holds a diploma in permaculture design, which he received in 2005 for his work from the very beginnings onward as an instructor, though he works as a designer and helped to establish the Earth Haven Eco Village in North Carolina. I know him best as a teacher, as well as publisher and editor of The Permaculture Activist. Mr. Bate, as an instructor, thankfully has graduated many, many students over the years, and that's how I came to know him, long before I ever knew about The Permaculture Activist. In addition to several of his students who I've met along the way, my own permaculture education is descended from his work, because Ben Wise, one of my PDC instructors, studied with Mr. Bate. More broadly, though, he's probably known best for The Permaculture Activist, as it's one of the two premier English-language permaculture magazines, and the only one that I know of printed in the United States, which celebrated its 27th anniversary in 2012, and Mr. Bate took over publication of the magazine in 1990, in addition to his duties of editing and writing for it. And all of these experiences as a teacher, publisher, editor, and writer come through in the final product of this book. The Permaculture Handbook is the most readable and enjoyable book about permaculture I've encountered so far. The language in easy prose grabbed my attention and carried me on in the way that a very consuming novel might, very differently than a piece of popular nonfiction. Once I picked it up, it was hard to put down, and I read through the body of the book in a couple of days. And of course, this book is about permaculture, which forms the core, but the focus of the topic of that discussion and the 22 chapters that make up the main body of the book is around the notion of a garden farm. And this garden farm is small scale, a city lot of a few hundred square feet, up to perhaps 2 or 3 acres, about a hectare, ideally located in an urban or near-urban setting that makes the farm available to markets. And this small scale and proximity allow it to be managed by a family, or maybe only one person, or a couple of people in a household. And it's presented in a way that can be productive for the people who are working the land, both for their own self-sufficiency materially, but also in a way that it could be sustaining financially, with some numbers showing that you could earn a decent income by implementing this plan and the associated ideas. How we get there, along with the who, what, when, where, and why, is divided between 3 major sections, attitudes, elements, and outcomes, giving meaningful division to the material, with each heading setting the tone for the chapters that follow. The first of these, attitudes, presents the framework for garden farming, giving inspiration for why someone can farm and make a difference, the impact that doing so has on the planet, as well as a discussion of the permaculture principles, and wraps up with the language of design and the garden farming pattern language. If you're new to permaculture or haven't taken a permaculture design course, the first few chapters introduce permaculture, but also provide a mindset for pursuing small-scale garden farming, an intense, managed, personal care of the earth and the plants and animals one might raise in this setting. There's also information on the financial returns of such a system, the number of people who can be involved, as well as where and how to find a market or build your own, be it through neighborhood connections, a home farm stand, or local farmers market. This is gardening on a grand scale, but still in a smaller scope than what one might typically think of for a farm, in a way that leads to personal food security as well as a viable business. But for me, as someone who's been steeped in this for a while, the part of this section that stands out the most is on the garden farming pattern language. If you've never heard of a pattern language before, and I have to say that really until I delved into the world of permaculture, it was something that I'd never encountered, this comes from the book, A Pattern Language, Towns, Buildings, Construction, by Alexander, Ishikawa, and Silverstein. It was written in the 1970s and was presented as a way for regular people to work with their neighbors to solve problems and build better towns and communities through a series of problems and solutions. And the way Alexander et al. Laid it out was that each one was numbered, the problem was listed with its heading, and then examples and solutions were given underneath that. Peter Bain did the same thing with his work and walks us through a series of 68 patterns for a garden farm, each one of which references the other patterns within the language to form a densely interwoven whole. Many of the patterns will reference 5, 6, 7 or more other patterns and the way that you can use the ideas of the others to build this one in a functional way. Some examples of these 68 patterns, and I've only taken a handful here, are 1, and these numbers reference the numbers in the book. 1, landscape catchment, a reminder to catch and store water. 3, agricultural terrain, to use land most suited for agriculture and separate it from where we build homes and other things, that we shouldn't use prime land that were once farm fields to build developments or housing communities. Number 16, local trade, to build an economy focused on the very local scale between neighbors within a town or village. If you live in a city, then your block or district would be the first place that you start as you move out into the city at large. With this local trade, some of the core permaculture ideas, I go back to thinking of our zones. 0 is our home. 1 is just outside our door or near to us. 3 is a place that we might be able to walk to or travel to in a short amount of time, and further outward, the amount of influence that we have decreases as the amount of space increases. So, number 16, local trade, we work in those areas where we have the most influence. Number 19, neighbors and strangers, that we need to integrate ourselves into our community in order to build goodwill and to have people to call upon while working together, while also setting clear boundaries between ourselves and our family, our friends and our acquaintances and our strangers. Number 64, public-private gradient, providing separate space between our private, personal lives and our public lives, that our space with family and friends is removed from customers and acquaintances. And I was reading this book around the time that I interviewed Ethan Hughes, and I was reminded of that public-private gradient when he spoke about developing a portion of their sanctuary to become their school, and how that separates their community's private space from the thousands of people that they see annually. Or when I was talking with Cliff Davis of Spiral Ridge Permaculture, and he was talking about how they were going to turn their current home into more of a business space and a separate home for their family, and how that provides that kind of division. And I just found this pattern language to be very, very powerful and very useful. And the full gamut of topics that are covered within it include things like a woodshed, a barn, a workshop, housing animals, cisterns and water storage, fencing. The 68 items that he presents go on and on, taking us through ways to integrate and cite the elements that are necessary for his vision of a fully integrated garden farm. And I'd love to see this chapter in a standalone form, perhaps something that we could pay a nominal fee for in order to download and print out and carry around as part of our designer's kits. The information's incredibly useful, and the myriad of connections so great that having a copy on hand in one's toolbox would serve well when observing a site and planning a design. Even though many of these ideas are about the garden farm, they provide a holistic way to think through the processes about where all these different elements are going to need to be, and would be useful when you're talking with a client or even working on your own property about considering these things. When you think about a workshop, I look at where I'm at. Well, my workshop is going to be my garage. Because I'm working in a garage space, what does that mean for me? Well, if I'm going to park a vehicle in there over the winter, then the tools that I have and the space that I use in many cases have to be portable. There are going to be more racks on the wall in order to hold things, different bins, and the way that that's all organized. It also works then that my garage is also where my tool storage is. For all of my yard tools, I don't have a separate shed of any kind or a barn to do that with. And that framework for thinking through how to put that all together is incredibly useful and powerful for a designer. But the information on pattern language ends our first section on attitudes. The second section, elements, starts with one of four case studies in the book. And each one of these case studies stands on their own, representing different approaches to this kind of garden farm, with a very clear write-up of the location, climate expectations, and everything you would need to really get a feeling for what's going on at each of these separate locations. And this section on elements is where, if you will, the rubber of the theory and attitudes meets the road in physical practice, containing chapters that deal with land, labor, using the sun, water, understanding soil, plants, our domestic animals, wildlife, trees, and technology. These chapters provide an introduction to skills and techniques for garden farming, all of which are applicable to the pursuit of permaculture. If you've been gardening for a while or involved with permaculture, there are still places in each of these chapters to be surprised. And there are quite a few aha moments as I was reading this, where different pieces that I've read before clicked and made sense. And for me, chapter 14, Animals for the Garden Farm, gave that moment of amazement. For me, because of the different pieces that came together, but more so at Mr. Bain's understanding and experience with this material. I think this one chapter provides some of the clearest presentations of what animals to include in a small-scale design, but also how to include them. And he does it in a way that presents animals that are palatable to a Western diet. There's nothing in here about eating insects or grubs, as tasty and nutritious as they may be, but there's nothing here to make someone go, ugh, or feel particularly squeamish. And the old standards that come up in conversation regularly are there. We have things like bees and chickens, goats or rabbits, but also geese, turkey, and guinea fowl, pigeons and guinea pigs. And he also addresses the uses of dogs and cats around the farm as working animals, and separating them from our expectations of pets. And in his discussion of small-scale livestock, the two that really stood out to me were pigeons and guinea pigs, due to my complete lack of exposure to them except as park breadcrumb stalkers and adorable little pets, respectively. And they're both options that are ones that I would explore within my own design. But leading from these techniques in elements, we come to outcomes, which also contains the last case study, but more importantly, brings the theory and techniques of attitudes and elements together into a whole through an analysis of diet and food, culture and community, markets, and the body of the book ends with making the change. I find this last chapter of utmost importance because we're implored again to take action. No amount of sitting and talking about these ideas and what we want to do is going to make a difference. We need to actually take action and do something with all of this knowledge, all these techniques. Whatever that means for us and our own situation, we must act. As someone who comes from a background where quite a lot of action takes place in front of a keyboard, in my previous life as an analyst and in the IT field, there are a lot of things that we can do that can feel gratifying as if we're taking action, as if we're making change in the world. But reading this book reminded me of how much more there is to do. So I ask each of you, find a half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, a couple of times a week, and take the information that you're learning from this podcast, that you might take from reading this book, and put it into practice. If you're in an urban environment, plant something that you love to eat in a pot. Put it on a window ledge. Take care of it. Watch it grow. Nurture it. As you nurture it, know that you're growing yourself. You're nurturing yourself and making those internal changes, that every hour that you take to do this is one more hour of activity, of real change that's occurring. And after a couple of weeks, you will spend a month doing this, and you can look back and see the difference that this physical action has made in your life. And after a couple of months, a season has passed, and another season, and another, until a year has passed, and you can look back on that first year, that first day, when you decided, I'm going to do something, and did it, and see all the places you've gone since. And you can continue to join me here with episodes of this show to learn more about the things that you can do, whether it's just the aspects of gardening or community building or looking for those leverage points where you can really make a difference, or just how to find simplicity and scale down in your life. But not just for me, thankfully, you also have Peter Bain as an author and an advocate who provides a framework containing the information and inspiration you need to get started. Overall, I highly recommend this book. It's not something that I would teach from, as I think there's more technical information needed on zone and sector and vector analysis and how to go out and observe the landscape and do your mapping and everything else. But if I was teaching a course, I would certainly recommend it for additional reading and optional discussion. It's a highly useful book, which is just so easy to read and contains more than just lists or a short treatment of the subjects. You can use the information here to get yourself started to find more. It's not exhaustive on everything, and I do recommend further reading to fill your personal gaps. But use it as a starting place to inspire you, to spark your desire to know more and your creativity. And as you do, the path easily appears in front of you. Like Dorothy down the yellow brick road, the way is clear, and after you read this book, you're well equipped to figure out how to handle the problems you encounter. Really, my only quibble with this book is the infusion of Mr. Bain's opinions on the impact that a previous U.S. president had on the world and the state of society. I think that these remarks tie the book to a particular place in time, dating an otherwise timeless classic. But all in all, that's really a minor point, and not enough to dissuade me from recommending this book. If you're new to permaculture, buy this book. The presentation of material cuts through the dross and detritus you might find elsewhere, and delivers a beautiful blend of function and techniques for the budding practitioner. If you've been working with permaculture for some time, buy this book. The section on pattern language is worth the cost alone and forms a complementary paradigm for the large-scale, whole-systems thinking of permaculture design. Pairing this with a well-integrated method for placing, arranging, and associating elements of design in a cohesive, non-arbitrary fashion. It's great. It's awesome. I just really love this book. And I wanted to wait a while after reading it before I wrote a review to see if it would still have this kind of impact on me. And as I sat down to put my notes together, I wrote my outline before picking up the book, and it just flowed freely from me how I wanted to put this together. And then as I went through and looked back over the book to fill in some of the details for the chapter listings and everything else, I was still fired up by it. And I hope that this information that he's provided us becomes a part of the core permaculture thinking and can be included in the work of future writers, so we can continue to build this material and grow our knowledge and understanding of sustainable design. And that will wrap up this review of Peter Bain's The Permaculture Handbook, Garden Farming for Town and Country. If you have any questions about this episode in particular, or permaculture in general, contact me, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or give me a call on the voicemail line. I'd love to hear from you. Who knows, if you catch me at the right time, between about 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Maybe I'll be in a place where I can answer the call and we can sit and talk for a little while. I'd love to hear from you. Until the next time, take care of the Earth, yourself, and each other.